Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
I am here with Sonny Pastiglione, the writer of Dreamworld. He was also the writer of Love and Darkness from season one of Table Read Podcast. We just finished the reading. It was so much fun. How are you feeling?
Super excited. Great. It came out 10 times better than I could ever expect.
Really?
The voices, you never know what you're going to get when people are doing, you know, creatures and all these great characters, but I mean, the cast is incredible.
That's so great to hear. Yeah, and this is Sean Sharma, one of the co-founders of Table Read Podcast, along with Mark Nell and Jack Levy.
And lead of the Dreamworld.
I was honored today to be able to play Cassidy, and thank you for trusting me with that opportunity.
Yeah. Kids, I need to tell you something.
No, another story first. Mom hasn't called yet.
It's only fair. Come on, read Snow White, just till she calls.
Okay, one more. I'll read Snow White.
Read it like Mom does, with the voices.
Cassidy nods, his heart breaking. Reuben slowly walks over to Tessa's bed and slips under the covers.
Okay, here we go with Snow White.
You brought a great humanity, I thought, and I think that was good.
That's great.
I think you're the very innocent dad in this crazy world, which I think is very important to have that grounded person while we have these big, wild characters and personalities.
So what were some surprises today from you hearing it all come to life? Because you've had the script for, you said, almost 20 years.
Yeah. I think one of the main things was that there were lines that I didn't expect to be funny. But when, you know, in the hands of these characters and in the hands of these actors who created these great voices, a regular line that I didn't mean to be funny became funny.
What's an example? Can you remember one?
I don't remember. There's just so many of them. And the ironic thing is I think it is heavy subject matter, but it does bring a lightness to it. And I think a lot of the demons took their lines to the next level. Mm-hmm. I think Ice Princess, everything she says is pretty hysterical to me. just her reactions to her father, her reactions to Prince Charming, when she doesn't recognize him, I thought was amazing. She was the one that was great. Jack, Mastodon, Dorji Porgy. They all just had that little twinge of off-center, and it just makes it so spicy.
Don't do anything stupid. We're here for the magic beans. Nobody has to get hurt.
Under which, Mastodon draws a mini Gatling gun which fits around his right fist.
Mr. Bank President, I am the fabulous Scarlet Hood, and we have come to rob this bank in the name of the Redeemers.
Suddenly, we hear footsteps running across the roof toward a stained glass skylight built into the bank's ceiling. The footsteps stop, and Jack comes crashing through the skylight, conveniently landing right next to Scarlet. Jack, mid-20s, is a thief with an eye patch covering his right eye.
Is there a better man than I?
Here he goes again.
Do you see this as live action, right, or animation?
You know, I think it could go both ways. Because I think, you know, in a world that's driven by IP, our business, this is like one of the ultimate IPs because you have 24 IPs. Of course, if you're looking for something that has roots, each of these stories goes back 100, 200, 300 years, sometimes 500, 600 years in Europe.
And they tie into so many different countries' cultures.
Exactly. And they're all based in something that we all know. Everybody, every culture in every country reads their children one of these books.
Mm-hmm. So where did you even come up with the idea to tell a story like this with all of these well-known fairy tales and nursery rhymes?
Somebody asked me this, and I remembered today. I was flying to see my brother. I was in New York at the time. I was off from working in Hollywood for a few weeks, and my brother was in Florida. So I went, I was flying down, and I was in the airport, and I think I saw there was a children's section of books. I was looking for a book. And there was a Little Red Riding Hood book, and I just kind of looked at it and was like, wouldn't it be cool if she was a werewolf? And then as I was walking, I'm like, yeah, she could be a werewolf, and then the big bad wolf could be her wolf, like a dog. And I was like, oh, I could do a movie like that. And then I said, you know, it'd be funny if like Jack the Beanstalk was in it. Like Jack was like a thief. And then on the plane, I just started writing down, well, let me see if I can just see how many characters I can create an alternate version of. And it just kept going. And then yeah. I was like, oh, well, Merlin can be the big sorcerer. He can be the sleeper. And little Bo Peep, she can lose her sight because she gets in trouble because her sheep do something bad, which ends up being the sheep eat the magic beans. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, we can call her the shepherd. And it just starts to flow. And like
and you can take Humpty Dumpty and have suddenly that be like an owner of a gentleman's club.
Owner of a gentleman's club. And when I wrote Cinderella, I'm like, oh, Cinderella.
So fun, because you've got not only the recognition of these characters that are in stories we've grown up with, all of us have grown up with. But then, so you've got this curiosity of, oh, I want to see how these characters are portrayed in something other than the stories we've heard them in. But then you've also got the alter world, the dream world version of them when it gets all messed up, where you get to see a totally spicy new side of all of these kind of well-known characters. I just think this is really primed for people to be very curious about how this is portrayed. What do you think it would be rated?
I think we do have some, not dark subject matter, but there's definitely a level of violence in this. Mm-hmm. I think like a middle, it's not like an
PG,
R-rated.
PG-13.
Like PG-13,
yeah,
I think.
So. Mm-hmm.
I think, and also I'm not opposed to editing it to make it a little lighter in certain places. Mm-hmm. You know, it was written at a different time mm-hmm. when I think we were a little less sensitive to certain violence, and now we're obviously a little more sensitive to the world around us. But I think overall, there's a lot of emotion in the shows that we've just filmed and recorded. I mean, it's the loss of who we are and the loss of who we could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of our characters express those two sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though some of them have great lives now, they're not necessarily what should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take up that honor of fixing it, even though they're going to lose everything. And I think that's the definition of a hero. They're not, none of our good guys, Jack and Scarlet and Mastodon, you know, they don't think twice about it. They talk a little bit. But when Cassidy says that he has children, that's when it convinces Mother, who's the mother to all these children, like, oh, this guy is for real. And your performance, when you say, these are my children, that's the thing that convinces her.
Mm-hmm.
And the story hinges on convincing her, because then she has Jack and everybody, you know, go and do their mission. So I like the emotion in it, but that's not our selling point. You know, like the selling point is fun and just the transformation of all these great characters. So, and I love the demons. Now, the demons was one that I was like, oh, what can I do with dwarves? How can I make them cooler?
I want to say the demons are a little more fun to me than the dwarves.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You're the seven. You're my Bets?
Bets is a tad reductive, boss. More like friends with killing benefits.
I'm sorry. I haven't been myself lately.
Us two. Seems to be going around.
Anyway, this guy was trying to put the moves on ya, and that's a no-no. So now it's time to step up to the plate. You don't owe him nothing.
Sleazy's right. Killing's gotta be done here, and you're the only one who can do it. Buck steps with you, boss.
Yeah, you know? But you start writing the names, like I remember I wrote some of them on a napkin when I was on the plane and I was just writing like dumpy and meanie and creepy. And I was like, it just, the thing about stories, and it's the thing that I've always said and why it's so hard to pick a story to write, because the right story kind of writes itself and comes out. Mm-hmm. I think when you're writing the wrong story, it can be hard, mm-hmm. and it's a challenge. And I remember writing this one was very easy because the story kind of, I mean, in a weird way, because of all the mythologies of the characters, it kind of becomes what it becomes. Like, they're looking for the golden egg. Well, the golden egg is a big thing in Jack's story. And so you're like, oh yeah, that's a great MacGuffin, because you always need like the thing, mm-hmm. or what's the diamond or whatever the thing's going to be. And so it just kind of made so much sense as I started building it, and it was easy. And those are like, as a writer, when you sit down, the hardest thing is not getting sidetracked or losing hope or focus, because you can't quite get the story where you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And this one felt right from the beginning. I never was like, oh, I'm not getting it. It kind of came out quickly, and then it took time to write each scene and do all the nuances. Mm-hmm. But I had the bones pretty quick, because it's like, oh yeah, they gotta go back in time, you know, which is a tried and true trope, which always works. Mm-hmm. And then you get to read up on all the different fairy tales and nursery rhymes too, and you start to learn things you didn't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know Bluebeard killed his wives. Mm-hmm. I just thought he was a great pirate. Mm-hmm. And so you start to see all these different things.
Yeah, that was one of the most heartbreaking parts of the story, was knowing that Staria would disappear if Dreamworld went back.
I know.
And it's somebody who Bluebeard came to really care about, and you know that he's going to go back to being the murderous pirate when it all...
Well, the funny thing was, is I needed a girlfriend for Bluebeard, and... because there was like two choices. It was like Rapunzel, which I couldn't quite, because of her hair and what she's known for, it didn't quite fit what that character was going to be doing.
Well, and she'd just slow everybody down with her hair getting
exactly. She could throw her hair at the beast. So I said, so I made up Staria, and I think a note I had gotten back from someone was like, you know, Staria and Starlight, Starbright, it doesn't quite make sense, Sonny. And I was like, yeah, but like, and I was like, oh, that's it. That's actually the thing. It doesn't make sense because it doesn't work, because mm-hmm. she's not real. Mm-hmm. And that would be so much harder mm-hmm. for Bluebeard to accept and make her more heroic. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of ways, the script is about doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And if she's willing to do the right thing, knowing she's going to disappear, mm-hmm. then the others have to do the right thing.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
What was the thought process behind giving General Peter Pan a lisp?
You know, I wanted him to just be different. And that was it.
Instead of the swashbuckling hero teenager.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted him to have a little bit of a lisp. Because, you know, the real Peter Pan was like the head of the Lost Boys. He was the leader, so he was the most popular. So I wanted to give him something that was like made him a little detracted, mm-hmm. something that was a little bit of an insecurity. Not that
he ended
should,
up with a hook.
And he ended up with a hook, you know? And so... It was those fun conversions, like
where even as the audience, you're like, no, we want to go back to the real dream world. We don't want to have this Mishigas like
exactly, exactly, you know, or like dragonflies, like a little buzzing.
Oh, I love dragonflies. Fly with her, oh, you know, poor Tinkerbell turned into a little demon.
Exactly, she's blowing, you know, there's just fire coming out of her mouth. And she gets eaten by Prince Frog.
You know, you're known for writing these, you know, top hit dramatic projects like TV shows that we've all watched, but this is more whimsical and more fantasy and all that. So is this like what's closer to you and the kind of stories you want to tell? Is it the dramatic stories like that or more of the whimsical fantasy type of stuff?
You know, I think they all are parts of me. Mm-hmm. I think the thing when I go into a meeting and somebody says, so what do you like to write? I can't say what I like to write. I only know when I hear the story and I leave a room and I'm saying, that's a story. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, when we did Love and Darkness, I was working on a Warsaw Ghetto story. And it was good, but, you know, all the characters that we used for Love and Darkness were in that, but it wasn't quite right. And then I met with Scooter Braun, and he told me this story about his uncle, or his grandfather, and his last thing he said was, and, you know, and he was hungry, and there were these tough Jewish people in Hungary who used to kill Germans if they came up their mountain. And I'm like, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And I was like, that was the thing. And you never know when you hear the story.
The Vesicucha.
And you hear the thing and you're like, that's where I'm going to, you know, put all my eggs in the basket. Mm-hmm. And that's just sort of how I write. Like, I never know what that thing is that's going to drive me. Mm-hmm. But it is also... it has a commercial aspect to it. Mm-hmm. Like a commercial bell has to go off. Mm-hmm. And for this one, I remember back when I wrote it was like, there's nothing like it out there. And even still, there's nothing like it out there now because most of the times a studio or, you know, will redo one story, right? Peter Pan is now a cop. And that's the movie. Mm-hmm. Or Snow White is now a dictator, but that's the movie. Mm-hmm. It's not all of them together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the advantage of something like this happening because those are great, but you know what you get with those. This is so different because you get to see the wide berth of every character, of everybody's lore. And I think that's more fun, and I think it's more appealing to a buyer or a studio. I think someone hears it and they'll see, oh wow, like there's no way someone doesn't know one of these stories. Mm-hmm. And therefore we should do some business here.
Well, you know, the industry is definitely going through a change, especially after this last year.
Oh yeah.
And I think some of the shine is off of all of the same kind of superhero types of movies.
Yeah.
So going back to stories like this that remind me more of things like The Princess Bride or mm-hmm. like the kind of golden age of these romantic fantasy kind of imaginative worlds. I really look forward to people hearing this. So what are you working on these days? What's next for Sonny?
Well, I'm developing a cop show right now off a Danish property. That's very exciting. I'm doing some business with BET Plus. Mm-hmm. We have a pilot over there and putting that together and seeing if that's going to move forward. And they're great over there. And trying to find the next story to write. And that can be a very... lonely place because you look for inspiration everywhere. And when you don't find it, it can be frustrating because you're trying to find gold somewhere. Mm-hmm. And whether you walk around the mall or you go to the movies or I'm playing with my daughter or me and my wife are at dinner or we're watching TV, I'm always like, there's part of me that's trying to absorb everything that's out there and see what happens. And you never know. You know, I had an idea years ago. I was sitting in a doctor's office. I was going for a checkup on my elbow. I hurt my elbow when working out. And I came up with an idea. So it's sort of like, I don't think ideas come when you sit at a computer screen. Mm-hmm. This is the one time I advocate for writers, don't sit at a computer screen, except if you're gonna do research. But it's like, that's when you're walking around or you do go on a vacation or you go away for a weekend, because your subconscious is always working. Mm-hmm. And you never quite know what it's going to pick up.
So you change your location to let new stimulus kind of jog the imagination.
Yeah, you know, I think you can't put out without taking in. Mm-hmm. And on my schedule that I've had, you know, I handed in this project to BET. I was writing hard, you know, after the strike ended, picked up the pen again, and I wrote hard for months. And, you know, putting out all that energy and all that creative energy, the tank's empty. Mm-hmm. So trying to come up with a new story, is hard. And especially, as I was doing that, I'm doing notes on this. Mm-hmm. I'm developing the cop show. I have some other projects that I'm doing. I go for things that I love. I go for things that aren't out there. And I go for things that make me keep thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Like when I first met my wife, we met and I couldn't stop thinking about her. And it's like, oh, that's it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how, when it's right, it writes itself.
Yeah.
And it just, you sit at the coming out and coming out. And again, going back to this, that's how this was. I remember when I flew down, I landed with my brother and I had a laptop with me. And I just said, well, I just got to just do a little writing in the morning. And it's like 3 hours later and I'm like Midas. And oh, and he can be able to turn things into gold. And it just keeps coming. And they pull the sword from the stone and that's how he kills Marigold. And that's the sword that killed the sleeper. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it just comes out. And that's, it's a beautiful process.
Yeah.
But it can be frustrating. And I think not giving up on it and accepting the uncertainty that you're not always going to get the answer when you want it is the key to getting the answer.
Well, in that particular story of Midas's greed killing his own daughter is just the symbolism in that everybody can relate to or something.
Yeah.
Well, so what is one of your favorite stories you've experienced over the last year, whether it's a movie or a TV show? What's a piece of storytelling that you really just loved?
You know, I really liked the new Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think it's super creative and inventive and fun and so different from the original that it feels like its own thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of both actors and I just thought the writing was incredible. And I've enjoyed that quite a bit. Watched some Korean dramas. I love international dramas. There's a lot of good stuff out there. And, you know, I just have a daughter, a young baby, so we don't get to, you know, we start watching something and we don't come back
fall
to something.
Asleep. For,
well, either fall asleep or we don't come back to it for like, oh, what were we watching again? Oh, this thing. But I made it through the season of that. I watched the new season of True Detective, which I was quite impressed with. It's a shame that people are saying negative things about it. I thought Issa Lopez did an amazing job.
Well, then I can't wait to watch it.
It's a really smart version of that show.
That's fantastic.
You know, yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Sonny, I just want to say thank you so much for a second time doing us just the incredible privilege and honor of telling one of your stories and allowing us to live in this fun world for an afternoon. And then so many of you listening will be able to enjoy it as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for being the star of our four episodes and bringing it, man, and bringing Cassidy to life.
That's
awesome.
My honor.
Thank you.
Oh, shoot, we went a lot longer than I thought we were going to.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.